This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Welcome in to Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Tonight is the night. The Last Dance premieres on ESPN television. You get two episodes. The final season, the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls, their Last Dance documentary style. Abdallah, we're excited. Everyone's excited. It is something we will all be discussing and talking about. And the way I start this show today, Abdallah, is this. On ESPN.com, Ramona Shelburne has a story and how this documentary came to be and why Michael Jordan finally said, okay, let's do it. And based on the reporting, I think this is spot on because absolutely, Golden State was getting close, LeBron James was getting close, and that woke up the GOAT, the grace of all time. And finally, he had to take action, he had to respond. Because before we got to 2016, no one came close.
Yeah.
You can make an argument that Kobe, at one point in his career, in his prime, was getting closer. But at no point did Kobe ever get to the spot that the 73-win Warriors got to. Or the spot that LeBron James got to by going back to Cleveland, winning a championship for Cleveland, adding rings to the hand, and getting to that point. LeBron, the Golden State Warriors, created the action for Michael Jordan to respond to this moment.
So Sunday morning, good morning to everyone. 8:02 a.m. We are 12 hours away, less than 12 hours away from the Last Dance on ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN Plus, everywhere. Chris Bleck has said Michael Jordan is petty.
No, I mean I don't think that's petty.
It's the most petty. He's had tapes. He's had tapes. If you had tapes that proved your greatness for 18 years and you're like, okay, now.
Okay, look at it. You know, a good mob movie or a gangster movie, right? The boss doesn't react until something hits closer to home, right? Like, yeah. If something happens to one of his people on the outskirts, no one cares, right? Yeah. Like, mobsters get put in the marsh all over the place, right? It doesn't matter. But when it hits, like, if someone kidnaps his kid. Oh, now the mob boss is reacting. Now he gets up. He gets out of the chair. That's what this is.
That's exactly what this is.
Okay. Michael Jordan, the reason there is a generation of people who only consume him in highlight form on your social media feed and buy the shoes. There's a reason why people have only consumed his greatness in those two forms is because he hasn't done anything in the last 20 years.
And
he intentionally stays out of the limelight. But when it got close enough, that's when he gave the okay. Ramona Shelburne has the story on ESPN.com. It's a great story. Mm-hmm. You should check it out because there is a major player in all of this who's now the commissioner of the NBA, Adam Silver. Adam Silver was there, 1997, convincing Michael Jordan that they needed to document what was going to take place in his final season here with the Chicago Bulls. Adam Silver is a major reason why we are going to get this film tonight on ESPN. He now is the commissioner of the NBA, which is just another interesting piece to kind of add to this whole puzzle. But if LeBron didn't win that title in 2016, and all the debate was about the Golden State Warriors in this new form of basketball getting close to what the 72-10 Chicago Bulls did, this doesn't see the light of day. It just doesn't.
No, absolutely. Michael Jordan is Dr. Dre holding on to Detox. He is Guns N' Roses holding on to Chinese Democracy.
Well, they should have held on to that.
Yeah, they should have held on to that a little longer. This is going to be a lot better than Chinese Democracy. I made a rap comparison. I had to make a rock comparison.
Like, if you're a GNR fan and once that came out.
I'm just trying to spray it all fields here, right? I'm trying to make comparisons.
Easy.
I'm trying to make sure that everybody's covered. I'm trying to make sure the rock fans understand the rap reference. This is basically if Chinese Democracy would have held on to but never came out. This is Detox. This is Michael Jordan has held on to Detox for 18 years, and finally he's like, you know what? All these little mumble rappers suck. Here's the tapes. Here's the tapes with the best production and Dr. Dre rapping over everything.
Right.
A couple features. Here's some Kendrick on there because we're boys. This is Detox. And Michael Jordan is finally like, you got what, 73 wins with no defense? Oh, okay. LeBron, how about this? I never lost in the finals. Here are the tapes. Never went to a game 7. Here are the tapes.
Well, okay. Let me set this.
I did it on a diet of a straight diet of whiskey and cigars. Here are the tapes.
Well, let me set this straight. And hard work too. Whiskey,
well, yeah,
cigars.
Of course. Hard,
well, I think that's something we're gonna see on the documentary, is that nobody worked harder than Jordan at his own craft. And the only comparable person that you could probably point to is Kobe Bryant. And we already celebrated much of Kobe's career based on his Mamba mentality and what he did as a hardworking individual, right? But let's get this out of the way, though. The take is not the reason this is coming out is because LeBron and Golden State got close. And they're not close. That's not the take here. They were close. And, like, that's the thing I think is important here. That Golden State Warriors team, what we saw in the last 5 years is notable.
Mm-hmm.
What we've seen in the 17-year career of LeBron James is notable. And they are close. And there's a reason why Jordan responded. If they were not close, this would not be happening. And I think that's the thing I don't want people to kind of forget about as we go into the next month of conversation about the Chicago Bulls from the 1990s and how great they were, is that, you know, there's something that we're going to point out many times, is the 5 years Golden State just put together from 2015 all the way to 2020 now in real time with all the injuries they just faced, the mental side of it, of having to be the best team in the world for more than 3 years consecutively, takes its toll. That is something this Bulls group never faced. Michael Jordan in 1993 wins the title against the Suns, steps away. No matter what you want to say, whatever your take is, they could have won 8 in a row. They would have been the best team in the world for all those years. The one thing you can't argue is that it didn't happen, because it didn't. Jordan stepped away. They were able to mentally regroup, refresh, and get ready for that second title run, which was incredible. Not arguing that. The point being is, when you go to knock the Golden State Warriors, they were the best team on the planet for 5 straight years. Now, yes, LeBron beat them for a title in 2016. A lot of weird stuff happened in that NBA Finals. If you go back and document it, probably the better team, they were the Warriors. If Draymond doesn't get suspended, he gets held out, the series goes back to Cleveland, and what took place in that game, not surprised that the Cavs win that title. And you can point to LeBron to getting the job done and winning another championship. All of this comes together. This should not discredit those two, because they got close. That's the point to all of this, is that we want to have debates each and every day about, is LeBron going to be better than Michael Jordan? He's not, but he's getting close. Are the Warriors a better dynasty than the Bulls? They're not, but they were damn close.
But the other side of that is that they got close. But they're still not the Bulls. They're still LeBron is still not Jordan.
Right.
Now,
but
winning,
you know,
73
but you know
games,
how the, you know how the debates go. It's six rings. Yeah, I'm not going to debate you. Well, you kind of have to now.
You do.
You kind of have to.
You do.
Oh, 73, but you didn't get the ring. No, we understand that. They did follow up with two more. Like okay, we get it. The Warriors have not put three together. They are not as good as the Bulls. I understand that. Damn close, though. Damn close.
And what you have to argue with about LeBron, too, is that teams came together to beat LeBron. Like, Jordan didn't have teams that were coming together just to, like, Durant's not going to, like, the equivalent of Durant going to the Warriors to try to beat Jordan didn't happen back then.
Well,
like,
I mean,
he was,
Yeah. Go to the mid-90s. Barkley joined the Rockets. Why?
Okay, and then
to put three All-Stars on a team. Clyde Drexler, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Chuck Barkley.
And they didn't do anything.
No, they didn't. So the point, like, listen, people are selective on their memory on how things played out. They just are.
But I think they're also selective in the new age. Like, people don't remember that, yeah, the Warriors shot a bunch of threes and set a bunch of records. They're also the best defensive team in the league for a few years.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like they don't win a title unless they're the best defensive team in the league.
They
changed the way
the league plays defense and how they defend the perimeter because of what Steve Kerr and that team did. So it's not just, oh, they shot a bunch of threes and that's how they scored 150 a night and that's how they won. No, that's not how it was at all. They were the best defensive league for a couple years, best defensive team in the league for a couple years, and changed the way the league plays defense to change, you know, to adapt to how the league is such a three-point shooting league now. Like, they found a way to defend that and also be the best offensive and defensive team that year. So because of that, like, you have to give them credit as well. Beach doing what they did, changing the way the game is played, changing the way the game is defended for 5 years. And yes, they got Durant. But you guess what? You know what it takes to do that? It takes great GMing, great general managing, great presence of basketball operations, all that stuff behind the scenes to try to get that superstar to say, hey, yeah, we need you to beat LeBron. You got to come here so we can beat LeBron. That takes a lot for the other guys on that team to not have the ego to say, no, we don't need him. We can do this on our own.
I know Dennis Rodman was not a offensive superstar, but he was a star in the league.
Mm-hmm.
One of the all-time great defenders in league history, and also not only the greatest rebounder in league history, he was also an irritant, right? He was the guy to get an edge on the opposition. He was the guy to always be there to kind of create something to play the mind games. You know, Dennis Rodman was a player that the Bulls brought into the organization for that second three-peat. At no point is he Kevin Durant. But it's not like that they ran it back with what they had from 93. You see what I'm saying? Like, Tony Kukoc was brought in to this group.
Yeah.
You know, so I think if you look at the history of the league, to me, in my mind, there is no greater matchup than taking like the 93 Bulls and in your head trying to match them up with what we saw from the 2016 Warriors, the team before they got Kevin Durant. If you take that team and you match them up with what you see from the Bulls in the early 90s, the way they play defense, like, not only do you get two of the best defensive teams ever, but offensively, Jordan in his prime going against the Splash Brothers. Like, in my head, the schematics of the back and forth between those two teams, if you had to pick what would be the all-time best matchup in NBA history, that's what I would look at. Yeah. I would look at early 90s Bulls, either 92 or 93, because then you get Jordan in his prime, Pippen in his prime, going against Golden State before they lose to LeBron in that season in 2016. That would be the absolute peak matchup the league could ever pair together.
Yeah.
I know it's completely made up, but like, that's in my head, that would be schematically the most interesting.
Well, you'd have to get like a time machine. You'd have to go back to when each player were born and make sure they were all born in the same era, all came up in the same era. Like, there's a lot of just logistics that we just can't get into right now. There's a lot of logistics.
Well, no, yes, I know there's logistics. I'm just saying the style from that 2016 team matching up against the 93 Bulls, that is the peak of NBA history to me. The best of the Jordan years going against the best of what the Warriors had to offer, because I think that's the point to all this, is Golden State got close. They didn't get it, and LeBron hasn't gotten it. But they got close, and I think that's the most important thing. All the coverage of The Last Dance, which will debut tonight on ESPN, is brought to you by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. Abdallah, coming up next, I have to ask you about this. I was reading yesterday. There is a conversation about Tua Tagovailoa. Was it his fault that he is not a better prospect, or was it the RPO system at Alabama to blame? Who's to blame here? We talk to in the draft next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
The NFL draft Thursday night. You can hear the first round, second round right here. Coverage on ESPN 1000. Coverage starts at 5 o'clock Thursday with Waddle and Sylvie, our draft preview show on the Twitch channel at ESPN 1000 Chicago, brought to you by White Claw Abdallah. Excited to watch Waddle and Sylvie there and to listen to them here on ESPN 1000. Reading stories yesterday about the NFL draft, and I saw this one from Alabama.com. Mike Rodak, he writes for Alabama.com, and he has a story up about Tua Tagovailoa's success at Alabama. And the question that was asked is, was his success due to the offensive system and the talent around him, or is Tua actually a great quarterback? In the column, he has a quote from The Athletic's Bob McGinn, who's a longtime reporter who covers the Green Bay Packers. He published an article on Friday talking about different sources around the National Football League. And on Tua Tagovailoa, the report said that not only did he have the lowest Wonderlic score of any quarterback tested this year, they also, when talking to scouts, relayed concerns about Tagovailoa's performance at Alabama based on the RPO offensive system and whether or not it would translate to the pros. Here's the quote from one source that told The Athletic. We interviewed him. He's smart enough, but he's an RPO guy. Sarkisian, Alabama's new offensive coordinator in 2019, tried to do pro stuff, and Tagovailoa couldn't handle it mentally because he's never done anything outside of RPO. So they went back to the RPO. He plays a lot of pitch and catch in the offense. He's really accurate at hitting those slants, and he's good at the quick game stuff. He's really excellent. But when there's chaos in the pocket and there's a drop-off in his effectiveness, going downfield in tight windows is never seen on the highlights. So that's on Alabama.com from yesterday. What do you think? You are a huge Alabama fan. You watch all of their games. You have seen every throw from Tua Tagovailoa. Do you think what this scout is telling The Athletic is a fair assessment of Tua?
No. First of all, he didn't get the lowest Wonderlic score because Laura Rutledge had a tweet a few days ago that said, clarification on Tua's Wonderlic score. He took the test in the spring of 2018 and got a 13, and then he took it again at the combine and got a 19. So that's trash. And plus the Wonderlic score is trash anyway. But anyway, because Trubisky got a 25. I'm just saying. Trubisky got a 25. Anyway.
I think the point that this scout is kind of getting to is that...
I've heard Mel Kiper talk about this and how he had the best wide receivers in college football last season. He had the two of the best running backs in college football last season. He had a very upperclassman driven offensive line, and a lot of those guys are coming back to Alabama, but he had a lot of juniors on that offensive line. They're veterans basically for college on that offensive line for Alabama. So did he have a lot working for him? Yes. But why isn't here's my question. Why isn't Joe Burrow just a product of the system? You know what I mean? Like, why, if you're making that comparison and saying, Tua, how about this? His QBR, when he was blitzed, he's second out of quarterbacks. When he's pressured, second out of quarterbacks. His completion percentage, 20 yards downfield, third out of quarterbacks. His pocket, inside the pocket QBR, first. I mean, I get it. Run pass option, but you move around a lot. And if you're inside the pocket, if he has the number one ranked QBR inside the pocket, how much run pass option are they running? Like, how many times is he choosing to pass there and stay inside the pocket? And then his downfield throws between 11 and 20 yards downfield, he's second out of quarterback. So yes, I understand the concern, but it's not like he's, you know, middle of the pack or just top 10. He's first or second in all of these categories. Joe Burrow from LSU, and I'm not just trashing on him because he's from LSU. I'm trashing on him because he was garbage in 2018. Joe Brady comes in, changed how LSU's offense to
smells like a new system. No,
to fit what Joe Burrow
was saying,
a
system quarterback
to fit what Joe Burrow was doing in high school.
Does that smell like a new system?
They ran the same system he ran in high school. And he set records at LSU and won the Heisman. He's going to be the number one pick in the draft. So don't tell me about system quarterbacks without mentioning every quarterback in college football runs a system. That's why they succeed. Look at Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts was benched for Tua Tagovailoa, statistically the best quarterback in Alabama history when he was there. He went to Oklahoma, learned their system, set records at Oklahoma, beat Kyler Murray's records, beat Baker Mayfield's records. So don't tell me that college football is a system. Every college runs a system. Mm-hmm. You have a limited time with these quarterbacks. It's not like you have 10 years of Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama where you can develop around him and everything. No, we find a quarterback that tries to fit our system, and you run the best system for that quarterback, and you try to win the most games possible and win a national championship. That's what Oklahoma does every year. That's what Alabama tries to do every year. That's what LSU does every year. Literally, Oklahoma has had three different quarterbacks be up for the Heisman and be in the playoff with three years in a row. So don't talk to me about a dude being a system quarterback when every other quarterback in college football is a system quarterback.
312-332-3776 if you want to talk about the NFL draft with Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000. Okay, a couple things. I agree with what you're pointing out here. The other thing I would kind of look at is, who does this scout work for? Right, like with all of this stuff that gets out.
Who does this scout work for?
Okay, like we're not going to find out because that's not how it works.
Yeah.
But this is how it works. Scout says something, ignoring the production to knock dude. Mm-hmm. Why? Maybe he has different motives.
Like Lombardi.
Maybe he hopes that he falls in the draft. Maybe this scout is a scout for the Raiders. Maybe this Raiders scout hopes that Tua somehow slips out of the top 10. Mm-hmm. Maybe this scout works for the San Francisco 49ers, a team with multiple first-round picks. Maybe they're hoping he slips, he slides, and then the 49ers could jump up to 10, 9, and select a Tua Tagovailoa. Mm-hmm. So I always look at this stuff and I say, oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting way to look at it. Is that what I saw when I watched college football? From when I watched, Tua looks like a guy who is nimble in the pocket and he makes good decisions. He uses his head to dictate where he wants defenders to go. Most famously, in that throw he wins the national championship with, he's looking off the safety, and then he comes back left the other way to hit that go route down the sideline for a touchdown to win the game. Like, Tua is a quarterback who can go through reads, who can be mobile enough in the pocket, and to make those throws. So I'm not as concerned. The other thing I would look at with the quote from the anonymous source, the scout, who told The Athletic that not only is it a concern for his 13 on the Wonderlic, but also that, quote, he couldn't handle it mentally, and that's why Sarkisian went back to the RPO. Now, I, like Abdallah, who is an Alabama fan, I am a USC fan. If there's one guy I don't trust with my offense, it would be Steve Sarkisian, 7-win Sark. This guy is not good. He might be a fine offensive coordinator and an assistant to Nick Saban, but Nick Saban's running the show. So if you're telling me the reason why Tua couldn't handle it was because Coach Sark was really trying to implement something here, but, you know, the kid, Tua, not smart enough, couldn't get it, I wouldn't believe that. You know why? Because I've seen and read and followed Steve Sarkisian's progression throughout college football.
Yeah.
He's not someone that I would trust to be able to implement and to coach up players to get the most out of them. I saw it at USC. It didn't happen, right? So, like, there's a lot that goes into this. And I think that this is possibly being leaked. So then teams who are not in the top five get a chance to go at a player like Tagovailoa.
I would say to those teams that are looking for a reason to not draft Tua, go ahead. Don't draft him. Draft Justin Herbert and see where you get. He may be great, but if you look at every quarterback, I'm not saying this to knock other quarterbacks, but every quarterback comes in and runs a system. That's what they do, especially in this era that we live in with transfers and guys coming in for a year, guys coming in for 2 years, Joe Burrow coming in and being bad in 2018 and winning a Heisman in 2019. You know, this isn't like Lamar Jackson, where he was great 1 year and then dipped a little bit. This isn't Jordan Love, where he dropped a little bit because he lost some offensive weapons or everything. These are guys that came in. Tua came in and did it for 3 years. You know, Joe Burrow came in. He came in as a two and a half years, whatever. And then Joe Burrow came in and did it for 1 year. Justin Herbert, who's played more games than anybody in this draft, has had basically he hasn't gotten any better in those 4 years. He's been the same dude for 4 years. So yeah, all these quarterbacks have reasons to knock them. If you try to find reasons to knock them, or you can look at their upside and say that's something I can mold and work with, and that can be a franchise quarterback for the next 10 years.
Let's go to Mike in Hoffman Estates here on ESPN 1000. What's up, Mike?
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. Kind of to start, one point, Wunderlich test, I hate that that gets brought up. I don't even see the relevancy. I've never seen a study that translates to guys in success in the NFL right now. Like, is Matt Ryan got a good one? Tom Brady? Like, I don't care, right? So that's thrown out the window. I feel like ever since the injury, people have just been finding reasons to just drop Tua. Like, the guy came in, won a natty champ as a freshman. Like, come on. Don't get me wrong, Joe Burrow I think is going to be great. Did he have Thaddeus Young? I think Justin Jefferson's first round pick, I believe that's his name. I mean, he had a very stacked offense. His halfback's going to get drafted. I mean, don't get me wrong, Joe Burrow's probably going to be great too. But would you be surprised would people really be surprised if Tua's just as good, if not better, than Joe Burrow? I mean, especially if he's going to keep falling in the draft, he's just going to be on a better roster. And I'm a Tua guy. I mean, the only thing that scares me is the medical, but I think people are just trying to find things to just drop them down, and just like Joe Burrow's just automatically going to be a franchise quarterback.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Call again. So, yeah, I agree with that statement there. You know, why did Lamar Jackson fall? Why did Aaron Rodgers fall? Right? Like, quarterbacks who are talented, we find ways to say mm-hmm. that they're not. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, for as many that fall and then we doubt it, there are many that are picked high that we thought would turn into something. I will raise my hand. The one name that I always go to, I got Johnny Manziel wrong. There's no one that I saw play college football better than Johnny Manziel. Awesome. Then Reggie Bush is like the only other guy.
Yeah.
But I thought, even though he was smaller and he had some off-the-field questions, I thought he would figure it out because he was so talented. I was wrong there, right? And so when you look at it, he kind of was picked at the right spot, right? He went like 22nd.
Yep.
So like he wasn't a number one pick, but still teams found ways to not draft him early on. And I think Tua, if you look at the positive side of it, I think there's just too much upside there.
The only reason, and it's a big reason, that I would question drafting Tua is the medicals. That's it. That's the only reason. This is a dude that could have won two Heismans. He was in the running for both Heisman trophies. But then he got hurt. Now, that's a huge concern. But other than that, everything on the field, everything off the field, besides the medicals, he is a franchise quarterback.
For the next month, while The Last Dance is airing on ESPN television, Black and Abdallah, each time we host a show here on ESPN 1000, we will bring you a segment called Bulls Backstory. On Friday night, we talked about Jordan in the 91 finals, switching hands against the Lakers. We really got into that for a full segment. Today, we look into Steve Kerr's game winner from Game 6 in the 1997 finals. We talk about it next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports. It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
You see this news about the NBA?
Yes, I said vaguely.
There's a starter in the NBA, a star, who is selling his house. We'll get into that in a couple minutes here on ESPN 1000.
You can't sell houses now? We can't.
No, I'm just saying it's notable. We'll get to it in a minute. Each week at this time here on ESPN 1000, we have our favorite segment. It's called Good Question. This is how it works. Throughout the year, Adam, myself, Tyler, we all listen to everything here at ESPN 1000. And when a host at ESPN 1000 asks a question to a guest on the phone and the guest responds good or great question, they score a point. And we keep a running tally for the entire year, and then we crown a champion at the end of the year. So when we look at the scoreboard for 2020, what does our leaderboard look like?
It's no surprise, Chris, that Tommy Waddle, Tommy over the middle, is winning right now.
85 Bear. How about that?
I have a feeling he will be dethroned today.
Wow.
But Cap and Sylvie are tied at second place with 16. They can't seem to
catch Waddle.
To catch Waddle or to pull away from each other.
Yeah, right. Like, they're in a pack together, and Waddle always out in front, which is no surprise because we remember watching him go over in the middle and no one could keep up with Tom Waddle over the middle.
Well, I mean, he'll tell you. He was pretty slow.
No, but
like,
listen,
a lot of people could keep up with Tommy.
He created space because of the route running and his expertise
great
on the football field.
Great hands.
Today's edition of Good Question.
You're going to take any questions?
Do you want me to let me finish talking? You ask me a question, I'm going to answer it. Don't interrupt me, okay? Just leave it plain and simple, all right?
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
On a rent?
Rent.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38. Dad, I got a question for
you. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
It's the question that drives us, Neil. It's the question that brought you here.
How could you ask me a question like that? What is my opinion of his performance?
I'm Ron Burgundy?
Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? I got a question for you. Can
I get an answer? Here's today's edition of Good Question.
When you were going in before, at what point did you think
Peter Burns
what I was going to order
best week
Champions
ever.
Dinner? Does that ever come into mind, like the week leading into a tournament, or did it do that at 87, or it wasn't until you won it that you thought, all right, I got some time to
the sheet?
Yeah, you know, I didn't. It's a good question. Matter of fact, I've never had that question. That's a great question.
Oh, wow,
no, I've amazingly enough heard people I respect as analysts say they're not sure about Isaiah Simmons and how he will fit into the NFL, where he'll play and how he'll play, which stuns me. I think this guy is perfect for the NFL. But we always know there's one guy that may drop for one reason or another. Could he be that guy, or are you solid? He's a solid top five pick to you?
That's a great question. For this draft preparation that here you've got coming up now, and obviously it's going to be different than it's ever been before. How easy is the communication flow? Have there been any hiccups? Have you guys done any kind of mock drafts where you guys go through the processes of getting, you know, like four picks away from where you're at, then getting through your pick in that type of situation?
Yeah, listen, great questions.
If you were a wagering man, September 10th, I think that's the Thursday that the NFL kicks off. Do you believe that the NFL will be kicking off on time this year?
Man, honest to gosh, I have no idea. And anybody that says they have an idea, I think is crazy. I think there's a chance we will be maybe without fans. I read an article today, and I would say this was probably made the most sense to me. Now, again, we're sitting here in the middle of April.
Wait for it.
And something that we don't know anything about and predict in September. Hmm. But it talked about games without fans, and then teams that are quarantined. I Yurko, it's a great question.
Stop. Right? If Odell Beckham Jr. Jonathan is Hood. The guy that steps in and is the new wide receiver for the Vikings, well, once again, I could see them again solidify themselves as the second best team in the North.
Certainly possible. I mean, that would be a big weapon for them. I mean, they're a good defense. I mean, that's a great question.
What will the future when things do open? Uh-oh. I mean, we're talking about this with sports. I mean, even if sports return, will there be crowds?
Will Cap get one next?
Will
the next one be from Cap?
Will he be shut out?
Halfway to normal. Mm. How will restaurants change?
Will he take that?
It's a good question.
Oh no! Wow! So the new leaderboard.
Not dethroned.
Wow.
Still at 18. Kay. Sylvie, second place, 17. Cap, third place, 16. Take that.
If you hear a great or good question throughout the week, tweet at Chris Black or at Adam A. Abdallah on Twitter throughout the week. We keep track. Okay, did you see this story that Anthony Davis, Lakers forward, is putting his house on the market? He's selling
his house in Los Angeles. His $7.9 million house is going on the market. Did you see this from yesterday?
How long has he had this house?
I don't know, to be honest.
Because is this a house that he got when he...
Like a starter house? Is this a starter house for Anthony Davis?
Well, no,
a $7.9 million house?
No, what I'm asking here is this. What I'm asking is, now that he's in L.A., is this a house that he had in L.A. before he moved to L.A.? And now that he's in L.A. and he's maybe seeking to be there long term, he's like, you know what? This was just a vacation home for me, and now I need to upgrade said house. It's going to be a buyer's market here soon. I'm going to be able to get a cheap loan if I need it. I can refi if I need it. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to upgrade my housing.
It's a Mediterranean mansion that sits behind
Mediterranean
gates
flair.
With a guest house and a $1 million Infinity Edge swimming pool. Oh, How about that?
Best water slide I've seen in a house ever.
He has a water slide?
Yeah. Oh, two.
Dual water slides. Yeah, that was
Why do you need two water slides?
And a spa. He has a spa there.
Cap's got a spa.
Let me ask you this. Does this have anything to do with the new regime here with the Chicago Bulls?
No.
Karnaufis, you got a deal here? Do we have a Anthony Davis on the market for free agency? Are the Bulls in play?
No shot.
All right, Black and Abdallah coming up next. I have four takes that you are going to hear over the next month.
Four?
Because of The Last Dance. You're going to hear these takes, and we're going to tell you what they are before they happen.
And Abdallah on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.